Chapter 3. 0948 GMT. Melissa Kapoor had had her own grandstand view of the event, in the minutes before she took Tasha's call. Although, even a professional astronomer, and though she was surrounded by other professional and celebrity eclipse watchers, she had been distracted by the earthly view. What a view, though. Skythrust 2 was a human-made island in the sky. And high in the sky, too. 20 kilometres above the Southern Ocean. Above the troposphere, with its clouds and murk. In fact, the lower air itself looked like an ocean from this vantage. A deep blue ocean of the sky. Not a shred of cloud above to spoil her view of the sun. A scene from inside this airtight bubble. A clear-walled observation lounge, which sat on a sprawling open deck. Even as the shadow of the moon had eaten its way across the disk, heading for that magic moment of totality, even as the overall light level subtly dropped moment by moment. Nothing to distract her save the astounding bulk of Skythrust itself, an observing platform steady as a rock. This island in the sky was suspended between two hulls, equally immense cylinders, each containing a power plant, the jet engines that controlled the craft's positioning, and other infrastructure. And from everywhere, fine carbon fibre cables snaked further up into the sky to the craft's upper level, the buoyancy farm. This wasn't a sphere like a hot air balloon, or a torpedo shape like the old airships. It was a kind of translucent quilt that shone in the strange, dimming light cast by the partially eclipsed sun. But its upper surface was a solar energy plant that captured some of that light. And the immense tanks of the farm were entirely empty. Skythrust was an airship held aloft, not by hot air, helium, or hydrogen, like the old Hindenburg, with which she had much in common in terms of fittings and expense, but by vacuum, the ultimate lighter-than-air buoyancy agent. A couple of days back, as the ship had travelled from Johannesburg to this eclipse-watching station, Mel had been taken for a theme park tour around and inside the buoyancy farm, a cathedral built of ultra-light, ultra-strong materials strapped over struts set in octagonal arrays. Two of the ship's designers had bragged their way through the tour, gleefully pointing out that the buoyancy farm was all of an English mile long, and you could have fit hundreds of Hindenburgs whole inside that mighty volume. Skythrust was an Anglo-Australian design, in fact, developed from immense aerial tankers designed to export hydrogen fuel. A principal product for Australia now, manufactured from water electrolyzed by huge, sprawling solar energy farms. She knew that the Aussies liked to say they were exporting sunshine. What better way to carry that sunshine than in a craft built around nothing at all? But today, the spectacular Skythrust was merely a platform from which to observe a greater vision yet. Mel's observation blister was one of several set around the deck, each hosting more passengers, observers protected from an external atmosphere too thin to breathe. And, dominating the centre of the deck space, an array of instruments had been set up to study the unfolding event in the sky, all of them mutely tilted up at the same angle, facing the sun. Just like the faces of the people, Mel thought whimsically. All the passengers shared a sound system with an optional, if enthusiastic, commentary. Mel had tuned that out, but she had heard the passengers' gasps as the moon's leading limb had first slid across the sun's face, and more as the magic moment of totality approached. And even before totality, the dimming had got to the point where she thought she saw a first star low in the deep blue sky. No, that must be a planet, Venus, a magical sight. Now she tried to focus on her job. She had to make the most of the observing opportunities of the next few minutes, she knew. For her to be up here at all, to see the event with her naked eyes, was a kind of treat. Her nominal boss, Charlie Marlowe, England's Astronomer Royal, was buried down in the bulk of the ship, in a big dining area called the Games Room. She would be watching the data feeds as they clattered in, measurements from a bank of instruments ranging from infrared to X-ray, and, in parallel, providing a commentary for a number of global feeds. Another privileged position, but shut up in a basement, effectively, and hidden from the glorious sky itself. Unlike Mel. "Concentrate, Mel," she told herself. "Be here now," as her yoga teachers taught her. Such a moment might never come again. The light dimmed further. Now she was distracted by the unveiling of the corona, the bright, extended outer atmosphere of the sun. A shining cloud with smooth gradations of brilliance spreading around that central shocking darkness. A sculpture in the sky normally rendered invisible by sunlight. And then the final perfect alignment of the disks of sun and moon, the moment of totality. And the intensity of the daylight itself dropped suddenly, dramatically, an effect that extended to the horizon, where an eerie greenish twilight gathered. It was a huge integrated phenomenon that seemed to shock her, viscerally, a global scale change, leaving her feeling utterly dwarfed. And she saw now a phenomenon beyond the ability of any single instrument to capture. People gasped, whooped, even applauded. This was beyond her, beyond humanity. For all they tried to capture its fleeting scientific symptoms with eyes, brains, instruments, this was why people chased eclipses. And this, she thought, was why people were still sent into space, despite the sophistication of the robots. To see stuff like this, you had to be here. But that moment, as she would later remember it, was when everything changed. For now there was a sudden, shocking deepening of the darkness, all across the cloudless, eclipse morning sky. It was as if somebody had turned down a dial on some mixing desk, the brilliant blue fading towards black, all the way to that greenish light on the horizon. For Mel, unlike Tash, it turned out, there was no sudden moment of pitch dark. Skythrust itself still glowed subtly, even in the daylight, even in the midst of a solar eclipse, a glare leaking from the windows of the cabins and halls. Venus shone as bright, just where it had been, she noticed, bewildered. And, around the position of the eclipse sun itself, that corona still shone, looking brighter than before, it seemed, against the darkened sky. And yet a kind of darkness was soon spreading there too, washing out from the black circle at the heart of it all, as if the overall structure were dispersing out into space. It took long seconds before the corona faded away entirely. Seconds which she found herself counting out the astronomer's way, 1014, 1015. When the corona was gone, the darkness only deepened further. Now Mel could see stars coming out, joining Venus. Still, the eclipse didn't end. People began to mutter. Inside the observation bubbles, artificial lights sparked in the gathering dark. Through the shared sound system, she heard the voice of a woman asking plaintively, "Is that supposed to happen?" Mel thought she recognised the voice, probably some astrological influencer, now utterly baffled. No, this wasn't supposed to happen. This was very wrong. Her phone vibrated. She grabbed it, saw a call waiting for her from Tash, pressed it to her head. "Hold Tash, call Jane." No immediate reply from her 11-year-old daughter. "Take Tash then." "Hey Mel, when you get this, I'm in Newcastle, just out of the office. Look, it's dark here." Mel tried Jane again, no reply. She tried she, then Jane again. And this time Jane answered. "Hey Mum, I was just going to call. We're watching on TV, and it's getting kind of dark outside." Mel knew that Jane was in a rented cottage close to the observatory at Baldershaw Fell in Yorkshire, England. Charlie Marlowe's current base of operations and therefore Mel's too. "Stay indoors, honey." "I will. I..." "Is Sarah with you?" A second cousin, occasional house sitter. "Yeah. You want to speak to her?" "No, just close the doors. Tell her to lock up." "Are you okay, Mum? You're right under it." whatever it was. Still, the sky stayed dark. Many stars were visible now, she saw, in the sky around that blank black disk, as her eyes dark adapted. How long was totality supposed to be? The number had fled from her mind. Also, she ought to be timing this. She was behaving as naively as the baffled influencer in the other bubble, not like a scientist at all. But then, this was no ordinary totality. Honey, I'll keep in touch. We'll figure out what's going on. Just stay indoors, okay? I will. Love you. Love you. She flicked off the connection, made to call Marlo, but the Astronomer Royal was already trying to get hold of her. Charlie, it's Mel. You got me. I'm on my way down. No, don't. Stay up there. A bluff Manchester accent. On the phone screen, Charlie Marlowe was a gaudy splash of colour. 60 years old, she was not tall, heavy-set, and habitually wore loudly colourful trouser suits. Her hair, cropped short, was dyed silver-grey. Tasha's dad always said she reminded him of Judi Dench as M in the vintage James Bond films. She stood out in any gathering, and, peering into her phone, Mel thought she fit in well against the garish, somewhat ridiculous backdrop of Skythrust's games room, a fancy lounge with a chessboard floor and huge playing cards on the walls. Marlo said now, "We have enough eyes staring at screens down here. I want a naked eye view too. Well, give or take an airtight dome. Stay up there as long as it's safe." Safe from what? How the hell do I know? On this ridiculous blimp. Atmospheric turbulence? Loss of buoyancy as the heat goes? I wish I was up there with you. Damn it. I'm the Astronomer Royal, and here is the most significant astronomical event in human history, probably, and I missed it. But I need to start making calls. Who to? Well, the Federal English who are paying for this jaunt. Or maybe I'll cut a few corners and go straight to the FIS. As once I would have called the old UN Security Council. Of course, they will soon start calling me. Who else would they call, hey? Was I the first person you called? No, my daughter. When I couldn't get her, a friend. Good choices. Listen, Mel, I want you to stay close to me in the days to come. As all this unravels, you aren't the sharpest blade in the box, but you may have the biggest heart. I have a feeling that's going to be important. Because this is going to affect everybody on the planet. Tash was bewildered by that. Marlo was capable of enormous leaps of intuition, Mel knew. Only minutes into this event, she seemed to be seeing global implications. I'm flattered, I think. Okay, I'll stand watch. Good. All we can do now is watch. Measure. Measure what? And she bit her tongue. Marlo wasn't too kind about dumb questions. Whatever you can think of. Mel thought that over, looked for the non-obvious. Gravity waves? Marlo skipped a beat. Yes, okay, good thought. So we can't see the sun. If this isn't just some optical effect, a radiation effect, hell, I don't know. If the sun itself has somehow been disturbed, we ought to be detecting that particular death rattle. I'll put in a call to Baldershaw. Somebody will be making the measurements. Make sure we get hold of them. Let's just do what we can while we can. I'm going to be relying on you, Mel. Oh, and watch Venus. Venus? I... Voices clamouring in the background. Who's calling? Already? Oh, hell, I'm coming. Keep safe, Mel. And she was gone. Mel turned back to the sky. Still that eerie midnight darkness. Stars coming out in numbers now. A big black hole where the eclipse was. The moon, of course, now occluding the distant stars, as it had been blocking the sun. But the eclipse should have been long over by now, the sun peeking around the body of the moon. Remembering Marlowe's prompt, she looked for Venus. And Venus went out, right at that moment, as if somebody had thrown a switch. Mel murmured into her phone to make a log of the timing. Nobody else on the deck seemed to have noticed. Now what? Think, Mel. What just happened? Well, we see Venus through the light it reflects from the sun. Light from the sun that came directly to Earth took around 8 minutes. But the light that came via Venus took a little longer. having first bounced off that world's cloud tops and crossed space to Earth. Now that reflected stream of photons, it seemed, was gone. This wasn't just some shadow over Earth. There was no light coming out of the sun anywhere in any direction, as if it had gone out. So, what next? Upload, dummy, and get confirmation. She made a verbal note of the Venus observation on her phone, the timing, her tentative interpretation. Around her, people were reacting, laughing. Some called for drinks, most just stared. She had the sense that Skythrust, massive and solid as it was, suddenly didn't feel like much of a safe refuge. How much more scared would they be if they were higher still, or out in space? She raised her phone once more. Try again for she, on the lodestone.